And now, from the gleaming spires of Chicago, broadcasting to Niflheim, Svartalfheim, Olympus, throughout the nine worlds and beyond, the only Thor podcast hosted by a true descendant of Odin. You are tuned to the immortal sounds of Radio Free Asgard.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Radio Free Asgard. This is episode 197, coming at you from beautiful Chicago, Illinois. My name is Tom Harris, and I'm your host. We're a proud member of the Comics Podcast Network, and we are now available on Stitcher. If there's any particular platform that you all want to be able to download the show from, just let me know, and I will do our best to get us on there. So, we do have a couple things to talk about here before we get started with the show this week. The first thing I want to do is welcome a new member of the Facebook group, Michael Scudurlo. I hope that's how they pronounce that. I have no idea, who recently joined the group. So welcome along, Michael. I try to welcome everybody who joins the group on the show. And we also had a little question here from the Yugi Works, who is one of our fairly long-time members of the group. And he had a question here. Does anybody know what's the deal with, quote-unquote, getting the power of Thor besides Marvel's way of telling a story? Was there ever an in-universe explanation? Well, I have to admit, first of all, that I haven't really read all of Thor. So I'm probably not the absolute best person to ask. But I have seen a fair amount of stories where, you know, somebody is able to lift a hammer, blah, blah, blah. Now, I haven't read everything, but I do know a little bit about it. And, you know, based on this question, I've actually gone back and I've done a little bit of research on it. So there isn't an absolute consistency. I will say it that right now, because there have been people who have been able to lift the hammer. For example, we found that Captain America was worthy and actually did wield the hammer in at least one story, but only briefly. And then you've had other people, such as Jane Foster and also Beta Ray Bill, who weren't just able to raise the hammer, but they actually were transformed by the hammer. I guess you could also include Dargo from the post-Simonson era into that as well, though thankfully he didn't appear that many times. So sometimes the hammer transforms whoever picks it up into a version of Thor, including the armor and the powers and all that stuff. And sometimes they're just able to lift the hammer. I think that has really been played more or less for the sake of whatever writer is writing it, whatever they wanted to do. I think it would be silly to have somebody, you know, anybody who's able to pick up the hammer be transformed into complete Thor armor. It'd be funny, though, to see Captain America transformed into Captain Amerithor. I think that would have been really interesting, but it would have been a distraction from the story at hand. So I think that, you know, the writer wrote it that way specifically so that he wouldn't transform. On the other hand, of course, you have the Beta Ray Bills and you have the Jane Fosters who actually do transform. Now, in your comment, you mentioned a character, Red Norvo, and Red Norvo is a character that came out of the 70s. He was a documentary cameraman who went to Asgard along with some other people to make a documentary about Asgard for some hellish reason, I don't know, and was transformed by Loki into a version of Thor. Now, that's not to say that he was actually worthy, but there was magic involved. And then later, of course, Odin decided, okay, yeah, he's worthy. And like a lot of other people, Odin created a special weapon just for him. And he acted as sort of a backup Thor, I guess you could say. So while Red Norvo was rather Thor-like, he wasn't actually Thor. He didn't actually become a Thor. Now, I think that there's an easy out here. I think you can say that, well, it's an enchantment on the hammer, and so it's magic. Magic doesn't have to make sense, it's magic. And unfortunately, I think that's the best explanation we're ever going to get on this. Unless Marvel does set down some rules And I am unaware of them actually having done so. Now, it's interesting that there are so many sort of copies of Mjolnir out there. Because obviously only the real Thor should have the hammer, have Mjolnir. But, you have Beta Ray Bill and his hammer, and you have, Eric Masterson, and he had his mace. You had Dargo, which I guess that was the real Mjolnir. I guess it was. And et cetera, et cetera. I mean, you have even, Thor Girl has her own version of the hammer, though I don't think that's actually created by Odin. Actually, it really annoys me when the comics say that Odin created the hammer, because he didn't. And that's come up a few times in the show, because it's the dwarves that created the hammer. And then Odin enchanted the hammer with his own special enchantments that make it do various things, and including the worthy enchantment. Yeah, because obviously the dwarves would have been able to lift it in order to make it. So I guess the answer is yes and no. I mean, there do seem to be some rules. Some people are transformed by the hammer into having the sort of armor along with the powers. And then sometimes that doesn't happen, and it doesn't seem to be real consistent. But I would like to think, I mean, it happens more often than not, does it not? I mean, I think the transformation has happened with more people than it has not happened with. So maybe because Captain America just didn't hold on to the hammer long enough, or the Hulk, when he was able to lift it, I mean, it was because of magic. So maybe that meant that, he didn't get transformed into a Thor or whatever. This Thor series that they have coming out, the Thor's series they have coming out after Secret War, maybe that'll shed some light on that. I don't really know. I know that it looks pretty lame from the preview, so I'm not expecting it to be great. I have to say, folks, I've become so disillusioned with Jason Aaron's writing. I don't think he has good ideas. Now, of course, I need to qualify that by saying there's some of the stories he's written have been pretty good, but others have just been like the opposite of good. I mean, really, really horrible. And Alfheim is one of those things that comes readily to mind. And as much as some people really liked that Gore the God Butcher stuff, I was bored stiff by it. And I remember saying so at the time. And I don't know whether that's because, Marvel has insisted that he do things a certain way. But it just seems like the stuff he's writing now, to me, it just doesn't work as well. But, I'm going to try to keep an open mind as we cover it. We'll try to actually cover some of this stuff. We are going to start covering some Girl Thor here in a couple of weeks. So just be aware, the stuff is coming. We're actually going to be looking at it. Yeah, so Yugi, I think the answer to the question is it kind of depends on the writer, and there's some consistency to it, but I don't think they've actually set down any ground rules. And if anybody thinks I'm wrong, if there's anything I'm missing, which is, that's quite possible. I'm always missing stuff. Then they should write in. Write into the show. The show email address is radiofreeasgard@gmail.com. And you can also, like the Yugi Works, join us on Facebook. And you can write your comments up there in the Facebook group, and I'll read them out on the air. All right. So we do have an issue of Thor to cover this week. Now, we are going to be going back a couple of issues. Remember, I skipped over Thor number 17 because it's part one of a four-part story. And we're going to be covering that entire four-part story. Now, this week, we're going to be covering part one. Next week is a mythology episode. So I don't know if we're going to cover an issue next time. It'll depend on how long our myth goes. So, we'll see. Now, as we cover the eighth day, I'm going to try not to gloss over the non-Thor stuff too much. I don't want to give it too much attention, but I do also want to be sure to hit the main points of the story so that at least we know what's going on. Thor is involved all the way through, but he's not always the most prominent character, as we'll find out next time when we have an issue of Iron Man coming up. Without any further ado, let's just go ahead and move along to our review.
Cross the rainbow bridge of Asgard, where the booming heavens roar. You'll behold in breathless wonder the God of Thunder, Mighty Thor.
And this week we are looking at the Mighty Thor number 17. The Eighth Day, part one of four. Cover art is by Johnny Romita Jr. shows Thor fighting the Juggernaut. And Juggernaut is coming at us looking very large and unmovable. And we've got Thor with his back to us, kind of swinging his hammer around, bashing. It's a very dynamic cover, though I'm not really sure exactly what it's supposed to be showing. Anyway, though Thor is apparently trying to keep the Juggernaut from bursting through this wall that he's bursting through. Anyway, and the caption on the cover reads, "Nothing can stop the Juggernaut. Don't tell Thor." And we open up the issue with a scene in a cafe in New York City. And we have a geeky looking guy, African-American guy, and he's proposing to his girlfriend, and her name is Courtney. So, well, you see, Courtney, Beans, I rehearsed this over and over, and I'm still coming off like a nerd. Here. Steven, is this what I think it is? It's such a surprise. Like, a thunderbolt from heaven, he says. And just at that moment, there's this big green explosion in the cafe next to them. It goes, ba-da-thoom! And, big green explosion knocks over the table. And we see that it is Thor. Thor has been smashed into the ground. Now, you remember, at this point in the regular continuity, Thor is in the middle of this giant battle with Enrakt and the Enchanters. And this whole four-issue thing takes place basically between pages. So we have the title of the story here, and of course we have the credits. Dan Jurgens was the writer, John Romita Jr. and Claus Janssen were the artists, Greg Wright and Matt Hicks were the colorists, Wes Abbott was the letterer, Tom Brevoort was the editor, and Bob Harris is the editor-in-chief. The Mighty Thor in the Eighth Day, part 1 of 4. And we just continue right on with the story. Now we have, Enrakt, and he's got his little floating island thing. Remember, he's kind of blasting these magic rays at Thor. I know, I hate going back like this because we already covered this. And the two lovebirds are kind of running away here. And he's like, "Courtney, do you believe in omens?" "Well, yeah, I guess. Why?" "The wedding is off." "Steven!" And so Enrakt is kind of approaching on this floating island thing here. And he says, "Asgardian, take in thy fill of the sun and sky, for this is the last day thou shalt be able to do so. Even now, my brothers Magnir and Brona are on the verge of ripping out thy father's heart. Only with your deaths will the enchanters have their just vengeance."
"Powerful enough thou art," says Thor. "Such evil as yours shall not prevail, Enrakt. So swears Thor."
"Thou art the subject and the master, Asgardian. I command thee to kneel."
"Never. Thou shalt think far less of thyself, Enrakt, once mighty Mjolnir doth render thee unconscious."
And Thor whips Mjolnir at Enrakt and just kind of whizzes by him. And as it does, he catches it. Enrakt catches it.
"Thine hammer, symbol of power and force, of evil Odin in his resplendent glory. Have ye forgotten that I inhabited thine enchanted tool for months?"
Oh my, enchanted his tool.
"That it bends to my will as does my own hand? 'Tis mine to wield, Odin's son, forever and always."
"By the thousand threats of Ragnarok," says Thor, "'tis madness unleashed."
"If you consider madness prelude to death, then thou shalt soon drink thy fill."
And Enrakt hurls the hammer back at Thor. And it smashes into the ground, kind of big glowing green kind of ka-thump.
"Thy threats, thy fiercest attack dissuade me not, enchanter. So long as thine evil heart doth beat, Thor will fight thee to the last."
"An end that shall come as soon enow, godling. My brothers would partake in thy death, just as I would Odin's. Thus I depart to witness my father breathe his last."
And Enrakt begins to glow and vanish.
"Thou wouldst flee and expect the thunder god not to follow? I say thee nay! No matter how far thou dost travel, the hammer of Thor provides me the means to follow thee."
And Thor whips the hammer around and he flies up to this magical island thing. And he sees Enrakt is already disappearing.
"Until the enchanters all return, farewell!"
"The truly gallant fight ever on in pursuit of righteousness, and so doth Thor. Flee this plane of mortal existence, and still will I pursue thee beyond even the bounds of Valhalla itself. In the name of Asgard and omnipotent Odin, so speaketh Thor!"
And we get a little caption here. And Thor's whipping his hammer around. He's trying to do the Ajax White Tornado thing. And we have a little commentary here.
But even as the Thunder God prepares to bridge the dimensional gulf, his attention is diverted. Suddenly, his sense of responsibility to his father and to those he has sworn to protect diverge. For in that instant, a once placid city erupts. The sound of crumbling brick, mortar, and steel, of escalating sirens and frightened screams, of thunderous gunfire and the acrid smell of smoke, of destruction and carnage fill the air. And we see the cops are shooting at something or someone, and there's a bunch of wrecked cars and smashed in buildings, and something throws looks like a city bus. And it turns out to be the Juggernaut. Across all the universe, only a handful of living beings might conceivably perpetrate such massive annihilation. You wouldn't know that from any Marvel comic. Unfortunately, one of them has arrived, and we see, you get a full page spread here, and it is the Juggernaut, and he's going, grrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrr
And Thor, has been distracted, and he's decided not to go to Asgard, I guess. Verily, such rampant mayhem didst make me suspect the presence of the rampaging Hulk, or even Mangog. 'Tis no less a danger, though, for 'tis the bestial juggernaut. And Thor sees somebody trapped in the rubble. There, a child trapped beneath yon massive pile of rubble. And whilst the juggernaut draws near, an official of the law doth bravely rush to her aid. Dare Thor exhibit lesser courage? Dare Thor abandon them to the savagery of a monster? No matter how desperately Father Odin hath need of his son, he would understand. Where mortals stand in imminent peril, there must the God of Thunder be found. And Juggernaut is still encroaching on the people, and he's going, grrr! And a lightning blast comes shooting out of the hammer, and he smacks the Juggernaut, and he's got this, not really Kirby crackle, but the sort of lightning crackle, which is different. Away, foul one, says Thor, and Juggernaut's like, hey? Taste thou then a bolt of Mjolnir's making as only Thor might hurl at thee. Thor, don't mess with me. Got some place I gotta be. At the cost of many, it seems. Therefore, let the battle be joined. And Thor smashes the Juggernaut in the chest with his hammer. The giant ka-tang! Bah, like I care. Can't let you, anyone, stop me. As stands Odin in peril, thus must Juggernaut be dispatched with haste. Thus must he bend to the might of Mjolnir, and Thor's banging on him with Mjolnir, and it's not really doing any good. By my troth, though I rain momentous blow after blow upon his hide, and now to make the ground itself tremble, we see that he's got a shock waves going through the ground, and cars falling into sinkholes and that kind of thing. The Juggernaut falls not, as though he is even more powerful than e'er before. The Juggernaut is kind of encroaching on Thor and kind of bashing his way through. You got that right, Goldilocks. Something's making me that way. Something's drawing me somewhere. And I'll march through anything or any man to get there. For the first time, I feel I can really cut loose and crush even the likes of you. Why, says Thor, why unleash thy rage upon the city? And Juggernaut's like, you're making my head hurt. His eyes, 'twould seem all sense and sanity hath deserted him. And Juggernaut is smashing Thor down with a hrunk. And the cop and the girl that he rescued from the rubble, they're like, we're all clear, Avenger. Thanks. Flee. Quickly, air. And the Juggernaut is just sick of hearing about this. He's like, shut up. And he smashes Thor into the wall with a bract. You too much talking. And he's kind of scraping him along this brick wall with a crunk. Too much thinking. And now he's kind of hammering on Thor with his fists. Too much everything. And the Juggernaut has kind of smashed Thor into the wall and knocked him down, and he gets ready to walk away. His might hath swelled 100-fold, says Thor. I cannot help but wonder, where in all the world is power enough to defeat the undefeatable? And then we shift scenes, and we are back in Asgard. And we are in Odin's viewing chamber with his super cosmic voyeuroscope, whatever thing. And standing in front of it is none other than the evil Loki. And you can tell it's Loki because his horns are sticking out from behind his hoodie. And he's watching Thor on this cosmic thing. And he says,
Calm thyself, brother. Thou art not undone, nor would I wish it so, for Loki is not yet done with thee, though I would know more of this berserker juggernaut who plagues thee. Let the flames of truth reveal his secrets anon.
And the cosmic voyeur scope basically just shows us in three panels the origin of the juggernaut. And I like how we get this mystical narration going on.
Cain Marco's story began years ago upon Midgard in the land of Korea, when he did stumble into a long-forgotten crumbling temple, and it shows him in the temple, and there's this glowing red jewel. There didst he find a gem and mystical inscription. Whomsoever touches this gem shall possess the power of the crimson bands of Sitorak.
Sitorak? Sitorak? I'm going to say Sitorak.
Henceforth, you who read these words shall become forevermore a human juggernaut.
And he touches it, and you can see him transforming, you know, kind of glowing. And Loki is amused by this.
Sitorak, long has it been since his name didst cross my lips. Sitorak's brethren, my flame, have they such human followers as well?
Aye, for the call has gone out. The eighth day has arrived.
And we see a similar scene unfolding here. Instead of a glowing red page, you've got a kind of glowing purple page.
In Northern Ireland, a new exemplar, this one a warrior, hath emerged. A poor young woman of great anger and determination hath come of the power. All her life, Bridget Malone has fought back against the harshness of poverty and prejudice. Seeking a peace denied her, she fled to a desolate area. It shows her going like off into the woods, hiding by a tree. She found herself drawn by psychic summons to a long hidden area, wherein she found the Kestrel Key of Kraken. Now her fierce anger is matched by her ability in every form of combat.
And this Key of Kraken is—it just looks like a sonic screwdriver sort of thing. And then the end of it has this weird bird head thing with wings. Anyway, yeah. And she grabs it, and much like Cain Marco did with the juggernaut, she begins to glow.
As did Cain Marco become juggernaut, so hath she come to be conquest, the living embodiment of battle.
And Loki's like,
Kraken, a droll, wearisome, and particularly malodorous entity. Be there more?
And we see a scene, this time in glowing blue.
Aye, in Kenya, another exemplar. This one of the mind hath been born. Days ago, Olisa Kabaki was naught but a girl to be avoided by her fellow villagers. A disorder of the mind had quelled her youthful search for knowledge. Hers was a solitary and lonely life. She would have been destined for asylum, save for the miracle of medication. But then an intense mental call cut out through the stupor-inducing medication. Listening to the voices in her head, following them to the great Rift Valley, she came upon the ivory idol of Icon. As Cain Marco so did become the juggernaut, so hath she come to be Bedlam, avatar of mind and madness.
And so Loki has watched these three scenes unfold, and then all of a sudden there's a voice coming from behind him, and it's the vizier guy.
Lord Odin, I must needs speak with thee about.
And you can kind of tell he's Loki from behind, but when he turns around, he actually has Odin's face.
Tarakus, thou darest intrude upon the solitary ponderings of thy liege now? Begone, churl, lest I feed thee to the trolls.
Yes, omnipotent one, as thou dost wish.
And he's thinking to himself,
how strange. 'Tis almost as though... Nay, such thoughts is foolish, for Loki would not dare show his face on Asgard, let alone within a royal chamber.
And he goes off, and we shift back to the juggernaut, who is still kind of bashing his way through New York. And he's smashing a taxi cab here, and the cabbie and the passenger are like, run! You don't have to tell me twice. And Thor is here still trying to stop the juggernaut.
Thy mindless rampage hath gone on too long, juggernaut! Away!
And he smacks him with Mjolnir in the back with a quam. But doesn't seem to have done much good.
Somewhere at the brink of infinity itself, Odin doth fight for his life. Thou needest be vanquished immediately, that I might speed to his side. For the glory of Asgard, for the honor of her imperial majesty, I command thee, fall!
And he's gonna smack it on. Juggernaut manages to push him back, and he's shouting out, fall! And Juggernaut's like, no!
Gotta keep moving. Gotta follow the call. And nothing's gonna stop me.
And he grabs Thor and just kind of grabs him with his big bear hug. And is just squeezing him tighter and tighter and tighter. And Thor's like,
impossible to breathe. Losing consciousness. Perhaps even life itself.
And as soon as he says that, there's this giant facade of bright light. And Thor's like,
Young Light.
Who? And it turns out to be these two other characters that we saw the flashbacks for. It says Bedlam and the warrior one, whose name I forget now.
Our brother seems occupied, Bedlam. But time is short, and we must travel far. Separate them.
And they push Thor away with the big burst of kind of lavender color Kirby crackle. And Juggernaut's like, no! And Thor's like, arg!
My mind doth reel with indescribable sensations. Who are these newcomers? What dread power do they possess?
And the African one, he's got this like big Rigellian shaped head. It's just like this huge bulbous head like the colonizers of Rigel do. And she shoots out this purple Kirby crackle with a kastask and knocks Thor back. And throws him into all this rubble that's around from Juggernaut's attack.
By Odin's beard, few hath rendered such assault upon the god of thunder.
Consider yourself lucky, Avenger. Next time it'll be conquest you face.
And they start to glow, the three of them. So conquest, Bedlam, and the Juggernaut.
Mess with us again, I'll rip the hide off your flesh piece by piece, says conquest.
And they vanish in a big glow of purple. And Thor, because of course he has to speak the obvious, he says,
they vanish, an obvious danger to any they encounter. Verily, their purpose must be ascertained. Two battles must be waged this day. On whose behalf must Thor fight? Odin's or mankind's? The eighth day continues in the pages of Iron Man number 22. And that is Thor, volume 2, number 519, otherwise known as number 17. And we do have a few things to say about that, but first, a message from one of our friends.
The Fantasticast is your guide to the Fantastic Four from the beginning of the Marvel Age of Comics in 1961 onwards.
Each week, Steve Lacy and Andy Leyland cover every issue, spin-off, guest appearance and cameo, and more.
And in 2015, we begin our journey through the decade that Taste forgot, the 1970s.
Join us as we take a look at
the departure of Jack Kirby and Stan Lee,
the Kree-Skrull War,
the arrival of Marvel Team-Up,
Bill Murray as the Human Torch,
creators including Roy Thomas, George Perez, Marv Wolfman, Jerry Conway, Rich Buckler and John Byrne,
and of course, Marvel 2-in-1.
All this and more at ffcast.libsyn.com and on iTunes and Stitcher.
The Fantastic Cast.
Insert catchy tagline here. Wait, what?
And we're back, and we are going to talk a little bit about this. Now, we don't have a whole lot to say about it, because once again, it's a pretty good solid issue here. Obviously, the beginning of a four-part story, which takes place within a very short period of time as far as Thor is concerned, and we have the, because the introduction of these particular brother gods of Sitarak, we have Icon, and we have this other one, Kraken. And I guess there's another one yet to come. I'm not really sure about that. But again, these are names that we've heard in Doctor Strange comics many times. Of course, me being a big Doctor Strange fan, like I am a big Thor fan, I've always had this thing for Doctor Strange and his weird world and these all these weird deities or whatever that he calls upon. And now we find that they have also created their own version of the Juggernaut, so to speak, and they're going to be doing something. Don't know. I mean, this is what the story is about, I'm guessing. And so, yeah, interesting. Artwork really good. I mean, there's a few pages that are not as good as others, but for the most part, I'm really liking the artwork in this issue. We've got a couple really nice pages here. Especially right in the beginning of the issue, the kind of tussle between Thor and the Juggernaut. We've got this really good shot here of the bus being destroyed, and this before we even see the Juggernaut. Just the way it's laid out is really dynamic. We have this shot of Thor flying up to attack and wrecked, which is really good. Yeah, so I mean, I really like the way that J.R. Jr. draws Thor most of the time. Unfortunately, J.R. Jr., when he gets sloppy, doesn't really appeal to me in the same way that he does when he's at his best. Some details really stand out. We have the splash page where Thor is kind of laying this big hole in the ground, and there's this green smoke coming up because Enrakt had shot him with this ray gun or whatever. And we have, I just like the way Thor's cape looks in this shot because, you know, he's fallen into the hole and the cape has gotten caught on the edge. So you can see that the cape is kind of taut on the edge, like it's holding him up. And you can sense the pressure being put on the fabric. This is not the kind of detail that you get from every artist. I mean, this is just something that, you know, J.R. Jr. is really good at. I think in general, J.R. Jr. is good at cloth and capes and so forth, but not as strong as some things like, you know, we have an image of Thor here on page 5, where literally his shoulder is bigger than his head. So, I mean, I know it's stylized and exaggerated and very, very much in the tradition of Kirby and all that, but it just seems that you get a little bit too much of this sometimes in a J.R. Jr. comic. Not to say anything bad, because, like I said, he's got a really nice sense of layout and a really nice sense of dynamism. And of course, he draws better Kirby Crackle than Kirby did. So, you know, there's a lot to be said for his work. Story, you know, kind of vacillates between being a continuation of what's going on. The first few pages of the issue is a continuation of the Thor storyline, and then it gets drawn aside really quickly, and we'll just see how much time the story really takes as far as real time and the time that Thor was removed from the story in his own book, which only seemed like a few pages to me during the time we were reading it. So we'll just see how long that story lasts and whether they explain that or use some kind of mystical solution for it. All right, it's time to wrap up the show. Once again, folks, thanks very much for listening. We really do appreciate it. If you want to shoot us an iTunes review or some such thing, please do. We really do like your feedback. And, you know, even if you're not a big fan of the show, please feel free to give us a rating on iTunes. And that helps other people find the show as well. All right, and with that, I am back over the Rainbow Bridge, back to Midgard. And we'll see you next time here on Radio Free Asgard. You have been listening to Radio Free Asgard, a production of Tom Harris USA Productions, which is totally responsible for its content. The Mighty Thor and all associated characters are mostly copyright Marvel Comics. The stories presented are done so for educational, review, and entertainment purposes only. No ownership is implied. The silly voices, however, well, they're all me. Musical selections from Eden, the Invincible Sword of the Elfsmith, are copyright Mots Vent and are used with permission. If you like what you've heard on the show, we hope you'll leave us a review on iTunes, tell your friends, or even join our Facebook group. We really love hearing from our listeners, and we appreciate all of your support. Thanks once again very much for listening to Radio Free Asgard.